recognize, the chair recognizes the chairman of this committee to close the debate on the motion now pending, Senator Abe Murdoch.
Mr. Chairman, I've driven from one end of the state of Texas to the other. I never drove across that great state that I wasn't impressed with its size, with its resources, and with its possibilities. But I was more impressed on my visits to Texas by the type of manhood and womanhood that you find there. Big as the state of Texas is, it's not big enough to have a division or a contest in Texas democracy. Every man and woman that had anything to say this morning on this controversy said it. The committee was confronted with a bad situation. I thought, and then the committee thought, that if we seated both delegations and divided the votes between them, that nothing could be fairer. I asked the Texas delegation that is sponsoring the amendment to the committee report this. Is it good sportsmanship? Is it consonant and compatible with the great manhood of Texas for them to do anything but accept the committee report, be good soldiers and good Democrats, and go back to Texas united? I think.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the convention, under the rules adopted, I am about to put the question for your decision as to whether or not the amendment shall be agreed to. The force and effect of agreeing to the amendment would be, as the delegate who offered the amendment stated to you, the seating of the regularly listed delegation with a full vote each. It would amend the report of the committee to the extent that the contesting delegation would not be seated. As many as favor the amendment will signify by saying aye. Those who are opposed will say no. The noes appear to have it, the noes have it, and the amendment is not agreed to. The question is now upon the adoption of the report. The question is upon the adoption of the report of the committee. As many as favor the adoption of the report of the committee will say aye. As many as opposed will say no. The ayes have it, and it is agreed to. The next
back
order
in the NBC
business,
booth, the committee report has been adopted. The amendment has been defeated. In other words, the regulars have been, the decision has gone against them by the convention at large. There's action plenty down at the
ladies
Texas delegation. Some of them
the
seem to be leaving right down in the midst of that melee is Morgan Beatty and a shortwave transmitter. We switch you to the convention floor and to the Texas delegation.
Hello? Is this the booth?
Ladies and gentlemen of the convention, the convention will please be in order.
Go ahead, Morgan Beatty. Go ahead. You're on the air.
The other John McCormick, Congress.
This is Morgan Beatty down on the convention platform, and with me walking out of the convention at this time is Mr. Clint Small, one of the Texas delegates who's been chosen to do that act, and I'd like to ask him what he feels about it.
The Texas Democratic Convention has been overruled. Texas democracy has been nullified and set aside by a defiant act of the National Convention. Without rhyme or reason, Texas has been deprived of her rights. There is but one thing left to do, and that is to maintain your own self-respect.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clint Small, and with that, the majority of the regular Texas delegation has walked out of the convention here in one of the most dramatic acts enacted at any convention in many a year. Now we return you to the booth.
The proceedings had been carefully detailed with parliamentary scrupulousness by Chairman Jackson. He explained very carefully to the convention at large what their live voice vote would mean. and they clearly, by a vote of nay over a, defeated the amendment, which would have seated only the anti-Roosevelt Texas delegation. And as Morgan Beatty has just told you in the voice of the Texas delegate himself, some of them have chosen to leave to express their resentment and disapproval of this decision by the convention at large. Right now, a lot of attention in the convention floor is focused on the Texas delegation as they leave with their state banner. Those are the anti-Roosevelt or the regularly seated delegates. Meanwhile, the convention continues with its order of business, and we are switching you now to the platform, to the rostrum, for the report of the Platform and Resolutions Committee. It is in the process of being read by the Honorable John McCormick, Majority Leader of the House of Representatives, the Democratic National Platform.
We do not hear detailed scores of planks. We cite action. Part 2. Beginning March 1933, the Democratic administration took a series of actions which saved our system of free enterprise. It brought that system out of collapse and thereafter eliminated abuses which had imperiled it. It used the powers of government to provide employment in industry and to save agriculture. It wrote a new Magna Carta for labor. It provided Social Security, including old age pensions, unemployment insurance, security for crippled and dependent children, and the blind.
We've returned from the speaker's rostrum to the NBC booth while two amendments are being offered to the convention to the platform which has just been read. The platform has been offered by the platform committee for the approval of the delegates, and that voice vote will occur in just a few moments when these two amendments have been read and digested by the delegates. Meanwhile, alongside me, to keep us abreast of world news and to give us an analysis of the platform content, is Robert St. John.
Where did you get a good one?
Let's leave the Democratic National Convention in Chicago for a minute, and let me tell you about something very, very important. Adolf Hitler made a broadcast to the world tonight, just a few hours after an attempt had been made to assassinate him. NBC monitors listened in on that broadcast, and they heard Adolf Hitler disclose that German officers were responsible for the plot on his life. Adolf Hitler said, and we quote him, "You shall know the details about a crime which is without example in German history. A small clique of ambitious and stupid and criminal officers made a plot to eliminate me, and by my death, practically, to eliminate the staff of the German Wehrmacht. The bomb, which was planted by the colonel," and then Hitler went on and named the man, "Graf von Stupenberg, exploded 2 meters from my right side." Those are the first details we've had of the assassination attempt. And then Hitler went on to say that he saw, in the failure of that attempt to kill him, a sign that Providence wanted him, Adolf Hitler, to continue what he called my work. A small group, he said, was ready to stab him in the back as others stabbed Germany in 1918. And then Hitler said that those against him were a small clique of criminals who now will be ruthlessly eliminated. Hitler said that German soldiers must refuse to obey orders of the usurpers, as he called them, and that German soldiers must arrest the criminals. Well, this is all terribly important because in that radio address, Hitler reveals that there is some sort of trouble inside the German army, and his plea to German soldiers to refuse to obey orders of what he called the usurpers is very significant. It shows that there is revolt flaming inside the German army and that this assassination attempt was just an outward sign of something that we hadn't known about. Well, that is the news. Now I return you to Ben Grauer beside me.
Bob, while you've been talking, we've been listening to the proceedings down at the rostrum, and a little parliamentary discussion is going on this discussion concerning an international Air Force resolution offered by the delegate from Texas. While it's proceeding, and it'll come to a conclusion in a minute or two, perhaps you'd like to go on and tell us something of what you've culled from the reading of the platform. What do you say, Bob?
Yes, Ben. There's some very significant and important things in that platform that even some of the delegates may have overlooked in the rather routine and reading of it in a monotonous voice by the professional reader. The important thing is that, of course, is the so-called peace plank. That is a plank in which the Democratic Party, if it adopts this platform, pledges itself to, if elected, lead America into an association of nations to maintain permanent peace by the use of force of arms, if necessary. Now, that last phrase is important, by the use of force of arms, if necessary. Incidentally, the platform is very short. It's only 1,500 words. It's probably the shortest platform that the Democratic Party has ever adopted in all its history. Another very important part of the platform is that which deals with the so-called race question. The platform declares as follows, and I just want to read this short sentence. We believe that racial and religious minorities have the right to live, develop, and vote equally with all citizens and share the rights that are guaranteed by our Constitution. Congress should exert its full constitutional power to protect those rights. Now, that plank probably goes too far for some people. It doesn't go far enough for others. For example, it doesn't go as far as Vice President Wallace went in his seconding speech an hour or so ago. It makes no mention of poll tax, equal education. It isn't specific, but it does say that the Democratic Party believes in racial and religious minorities having an equal right to live, develop, and vote. The platform ignored the pleas of Southern delegates for a states' rights declaration, and its plank on the race issue didn't do anything to halt the so-called Southern revolt. Well, that's a quick summary of the platform. That isn't all, but Ben Grauer, I think, wants you back again, so I switch you back to Ben Grauer.
Fine, Bob. Alongside us, or rather down on the speaker's platform, is H.V. Kaltenborn, who heard along with all of us the reading of the platform. I wonder whether you, Mr. Kaltenborn, would like to pick out some of the salient features which you detected in it.
The platform, of course, is very much shorter than the Republican platform, and that is all to the good. Because the shorter a platform is, the more sincere it is, the more likely it is to have an effect on the campaign and to be frequently quoted by the candidates who are running on that platform. The platform, however, is disappointing in that so much of it is in generalities. It's not very specific. It's not nearly as specific as the Republican platform. For example, I venture to make this assertion that anywhere from two-thirds to three-fourths of it could have been incorporated in a Republican platform and would have been unanimously adopted. In other words, there are in it so very many of those general statements with which everybody agrees. Of course, the platform of the party in power always must differ from the party out of power, because the party that is in power recites in its platform the things that it has accomplished and lauds those, whereas the party out of power naturally tries to recite a list of the things that it will do or would do if it should gain power, so that they are essentially different in character. I like particularly the foreign policy plank of the platform. That, to me, is a very direct statement of what most forward-looking people agree should be the foreign policy of the United States. I don't think that it goes farther than it should. As a matter of fact, I think there are a great many Democrats, a great many leaders of the Democrats in the Senate who would go much farther than this plank indicates. But it does very definitely provide that we are to join with other United Nations in the establishment of an international organization. And then, if you followed any part of the debate that's now going on, the debate with reference to the creation of an international air force, as Chairman McCormick pointed out, this platform clause requires the creation of adequate forces for the maintenance of peace. They are not to be a separate, independent international force, but a force that will be provided by the nations that are participating in the maintenance of peace. And in that way, by eliminating the use of that word police force, which caused so much difficulty, they are, in a way, concentrating on the main issue. Together, then, the platform, shorter than the Republican, general in its statements, including much material that everyone would agree with, but very courageous, I believe, on this racial plank that Robert St. John has just commented about. It doesn't specifically mention the poll tax, but it does call for equality. Also, the recommendation with reference to Palestine, that is something that I don't believe was in the Republican platform. There is a bid to the South in the stress on non-discriminatory transportation charges, and they also declare for the early correction of inequalities. Mr. Wallace also mentioned that in his seconding speech. Then there is, of course, equal rights for women is very definitely stressed, and there is also a clause with reference to free press and radio. A similar clause was included in the Republican platform. The thing that appeals to me is the fact that here is an attempt not to equivocate too much. And while the statements are general, they are at least not carefully balanced. They do not, most of them, equivocate. So on the whole, as platforms go, I should say that it was a good platform. Now back to the NBC booth.
We're in the midst of the third session of the Democratic National Convention, and going forward at this moment on the speaker's rostrum is a rather involved and highly technical discussion involving the manner of voting on a resolution which has just been presented to the convention, a resolution amending the platform report. The amendment was submitted by Delegate Bradley of Texas and concerns an international airport. And at this very moment, the vote has just been taken by live voice vote under the chairmanship of Sam Jackson, and the resolution has been defeated, and thus far the platform as read originally stands.
We're now prepared to call the roll of the states for voting upon the candidate for President of the United States. The clerk will call the roll.
Now the official balloting is beginning for the Democratic choice for the office of President of the United States. The clerk is going to call the roll of state for the office of President. Clerk Frazier has taken his place before the microphone.
Alabama, 24 votes.
Mr. Chairman, Alabama votes 22 votes for President Roosevelt and 2 votes for Senator Byrd.
Arizona, 10 votes.
Arizona, considered it a great privilege and honor to again cast its 10 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
No, we didn't.
Arkansas.
Mr. Chairman, Arkansas cast its 20 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
California, 52 votes.
Our 52 votes go to Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Colorado, 12 votes.
Colorado voted 12 votes for Honorable Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Montana cast 10 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Nebraska, 12 votes.
Nebraska cast its 12 votes
for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Nevada, 8 votes.
Nevada cast its 8 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
New Hampshire, 10 votes.
New Hampshire cast her 10 votes for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
New Jersey, 34 votes.
New Jersey cast its 34 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
New Mexico, 10 votes.
New Mexico casts 10 votes for Roosevelt.
New York, 96 votes.
New York casts 1/2 a vote for Senator Harry F. Byrd. 1 vote for the Honorable James A. Farley. 94 1/2 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
And with the New York vote, Franklin D. Roosevelt has a majority of this convention. He is the Democratic nominee for President of the United States.
30 votes.
North Carolina cast 30 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
North Dakota, 8 votes.
North Dakota, 8 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Ohio, 52 votes.
Ohio cast 52 votes for President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Oklahoma, 22 votes.
Oklahoma cast 22 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Oregon, 14 votes.
Oregon casts its 14 votes for that matchless leader of leaders, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Pennsylvania, 72 votes.
Pennsylvania is proud and happy to cast its 72 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Rhode Island, 10 votes.
Rhode Island cast its 10 votes for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
South Carolina, 18 votes.
South Carolina cast 14 1/2 votes for our distinguished leader, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. 3 1/2 votes for Senator Harry Byrd.
14 1/2 for Roosevelt and 3 1/2 for Byrd. South Dakota, 8 votes.
South Dakota cast 8 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Tennessee, 26 votes.
Tennessee cast 26 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Texas, 48 votes.
After some considerable effort, I'm happy to cast 24 votes for Franklin Roosevelt.
24. So I understand the vote was 24 for Roosevelt from the Texas delegation. Utah, 10 votes.
Utah casts its 10 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Are there further votes? Are there further votes to be cast by the state of Texas?
Point of inquiry. In the regular delegation, there are 22 delegates present. Are they each allowed 1/2 vote, or does the 22 present cast the full 24 votes allowed to that delegation?
The 22 delegates are entitled to cast their 24 votes.
Then there are 12 votes for President Roosevelt and 12 votes for Harry Byrd.
Clerk will call.
Vermont, 6 votes.
Vermont is proud to cast its 6 votes for President Roosevelt.
Virginia, 24 votes.
Virginia cast 24 votes for Howard Byrd.
Washington, 18 votes.
Washington cast her 18 votes for our great leader and camp commander-in-chief, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
West Virginia, 18 votes.
West Virginia cast its 17 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt. And one vote for Harry Byrd.
West Virginia, 17 votes for Roosevelt, one vote for Byrd. Wisconsin, 26 votes.
Wisconsin cast 26 votes for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Wyoming, 8 votes.
Wyoming, wonderful Wyoming, cast 8 votes for our president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Alaska, 6 votes.
Alaska cast 5 votes for President Franklin D. Roosevelt. One vote is lost in the mail, the proxy.
Will the Alaska chairman cast that vote again, please?
Alaska casts 5 votes for President Franklin D. Roosevelt. The other vote it was to come by proxy in the mails and has been delayed or lost.
The chair will state to the delegate that if he's the chairman of the delegation, he's entitled to vote 6 votes.
Therefore, Alaska casts the full 6 votes for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
District of Columbia, 6 votes.
District of Columbia cast 6 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Hawaii, 6 votes.
Hawaii casts all of her 6 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Philippine Islands, 6 votes.
The Philippine Islands presently possessed by the enemy, but with full confidence in our commander-in-chief to retake and to fly the stars and stripes once again, cast his 6 votes for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Puerto Rico, 6 votes.
Puerto Rico unanimously cast all its 6 votes for Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Canal Zone, 6 votes.
The Canal Zone is delighted to cast its 6 votes for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Virgin Islands, 2 votes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Joseph Alexander speaking for the Virgin Islands delegation, which is happy, proud, and honored to cast its 2 votes for our Commander-in-Chief and President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Just a minute. The tally will be presented to the chair and the result of the vote will be announced.
While we await the official tally from the chair of this first ballot for President of the United States, which has returned Franklin D. Roosevelt as nominee, following a worldwide news story alongside us is Robert St. John.
Let me fill you in on what's been happening elsewhere in the world. The big story outside of Chicago is that attempted assassination by Adolf Hitler and a radio speech which he made about midnight tonight, German time, which was monitored by our NBC monitors, who heard him say that an attempt had been made by a group of German army officers to prepare Germany for defeat, as in 1918. Hitler took the air to reassure the German public, as he put it, after it had been officially announced that he had been slightly burned and bruised in the explosion of a bomb while a great many of his highest-ranking advisors were gathered about him. Hitler himself told us by radio that 13 members of his own personal military staff were injured, and he disclosed something we didn't know until just a little while ago, that one of those men was fatally injured, was killed. Hitler said, again, I have evaded fate which would have brought much misery to the German people. In the account issued by the Office of War Information on Hitler's speech, he was quoted as saying the plan was not just the work of the German army, but the work of a small clique of criminal elements which are now being annihilated without mercy. Hitler went on to say that it was a sign of providence that he had escaped with such slight injuries. Hitler said that he saw in this failure to attempt him a sign that providence wanted him to continue his work. And here, while we're waiting for the results of the tally down on the platform here in the convention hall in Chicago, are a few other highlights of the news that's been happening around the world today. On the Western Front, the British drive has gone 8 miles beyond the Normandy city of Caen. Americans have captured 3 villages south of the French city of Saint-Lô. In Russia, the Soviet army has driven 8 miles beyond the pre-war East Prussian frontier. The Soviet army has outflanked the Polish city of Lwów and has driven to the edge of the Bug River in a new offensive. In Italy, Allied troops are right now tonight pressing beyond the city of Leghorn toward Florence. In the air war, nearly 3,000 American warplanes today smashed at 15 targets in Germany with 4,000 tons of bombs. Way off in China, the armies of Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek in the central Hunan province have moved to relieve the besieged city of Hengyang. Off in southeastern Asia, the Japanese to continue to retreat along a 700-mile front in Burma. And now, back to Ben Grauer.
While you've been talking, we've been listening to the proceedings on the speaker's rostrum, and there has been some difficulty in tabulating accurately the vote of the Texas delegation, inasmuch as the two delegations had been seated, and the accurate distribution of the votes between Byrd and Roosevelt are being worked out now. And so the official tabulation will have to wait for some time. But this point is incontrovertible, that some overwhelming majority of votes, an overwhelming majority was for Franklin D. Roosevelt, and he has clearly returned the nominee on the first ballot. This concludes then the broadcasting of this second day session of the Democratic National Convention, a long and storm-tossed session which has seen the adoption of the Democratic platform and the nomination of Franklin Delano Roosevelt as president, a Democratic nominee for President of the United States. The National Broadcasting Company will return to the air from the convention at 9 p.m. Central Wartime at 10 p.m. Eastern Wartime tonight with a session which will be highlighted by the acceptance speech of the Democratic nominee, Mr. Roosevelt, and the selection of the Democratic vice presidential candidate by the party. That is one of the real contests of this convention and a focal point of interest. If the vice president can be nominated tonight, and that is the aim of the convention, this will be the shortest convention of any major party in some 50 years. And here now is an approximately final tabulation. 1,086 for Roosevelt, 89 for Byrd, 1 vote for Farley. That awaits final official confirmation. But we'll go down to the platform for the official tabulation at this precise minute. 1,086 for Roosevelt. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. It had been given by the clerk, but not, it was withheld. 1,086 for Roosevelt, 89 for Byrd, and 1 for Farley. And that concludes our broadcasting at this time. NBC returns to the air tonight with its full staff of commentators. Meanwhile, that's all from the Chicago Stadium.
The program's backstage wife, Stella Dallas, Lorenzo Jones, Young Widder Brown, When a Girl Marries, We Love and Learn, Just Plain Bill, Front Page Farrell, Lowell Thomas and the News, The Chesterfield Song Shop, Dr. Kate, Alka-Seltzer News of the World, Charlie Chan, and H.V. Kaltenborn edits the news, usually heard over most of these stations on Thursday, were not presented tonight in order that we might bring you the special broadcast from the Democratic National Convention. They will be heard at their usual times tomorrow and next week. This is the National Broadcasting Company. This is Chicago, WMAQ. The programs Alex Dreyer and the News, the Walgreens newscast, Don Elder Sports News, Hub Jackson's News, Jimmy Blade and his music, and Supper Interlude, usually heard over WMAQ on Thursday, were not presented tonight in order that we might bring you the special program just concluded. They will be heard at their regular times tomorrow.